after years on the road, Toomey parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk Toomey with your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up? Welcome to Talk To Me. This is episode 202. The guest this week is Morgan Lander of Kitty. She is on to talk about Kitty live at the London Music Hall, which will be released this Tuesday, March 26th. The Blu-ray and DVD editions will be available through Amazon. The concert film captures the band's October 27th, 2017 20th anniversary show in London, Ontario at the London Music Hall. Great to have Morgan back on the show. She's always a fan favorite. And before we get into that, let's talk about our good friend Scott Bowling down in Atlanta, Georgia. Yes, that is scottgoodcompany.com, or just search out Good Company with Bowling on YouTube, and you can find one of the best interview shows on the internet, shot by our good friend Nathan Mowry, who does all of the DDP yoga stuff, all of the Fozzy videos, and so much more. So check out Scott's interviews with members of Korn, Stuck Mojo, Fozzy, Islander, Seven Dust, and so much more. I threw in the Talk To Me group on Facebook. If you are a Talk To Me Facebook group member, you'll check out the video that I did with Paul Kuharski of the Midday 180 in Nashville, 104.5 The Zone. One of my favorite sports journalists was in Louisville and looking for people to talk to, or looking for members of his site to talk to about the Titans and all kinds of other stuff. So I basically got to interview Paul Kuharski for paulkuharski.com. So head over to the Talk To Me Facebook group and check out the video we did. It's called a Take a Lap. And we got to go to the Louisville Slugger Field and be on the field, which is the minor league baseball team, the AAA team here for the Cincinnati Reds, the Louisville Bats. We got to be on their field. Got to do a nice little behind-the-scenes tour of the facilities, and then got to do the walk around the park and talk to Paul about the Titans and his transition from ESPN, the Tennessean, to his own website. So it was a cool interview. Had a lot of fun. Go check that out, and you can go see me talk with my hands. But the guest this week is the great Morgan Lander of Kitty. Let's check out some live Brackish from the anniversary DVD/CD. Let's talk to Morgan, check out some classic Kitty, and then I will talk to you guys momentarily.
All right, motherfuckers. Song we have for you is a song you all may know, so if you know the words, I want you to sing along and kick some fucking ass. Song's called Brackish.
She is not scared to die.
right, guys, welcome back to the show, Morgan Lander of Kitty, with their new live DVD Blu-ray live at the London Music Hall out March 26th. Morgan, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me back on the podcast. This is very exciting.
It is very exciting. It's exciting to have you back on. Yeah. And it was very funny. Randomly, a listener today posted that he's like, hey, I just got done listening to the Morgan Lander episode. And I messaged him. I was like, wow, I'm actually talking to her again tonight. And he was like, well, I can't wait to hear another episode. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, no, it's really cool. I mean, it's been, well, about actually almost exactly a year, probably.
Something like that. Yeah, I have to look back and see how long it's been. But yeah, it's been cool.
Yeah. But yeah, so like, I think the last time that we spoke, it was because of the documentary that was coming out, and the release date was March the 30th. So nice. It would have probably been this time last year that we were chatting it up about the documentary. So we're a year into that. And I don't know. I think it went pretty good, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny. I hate my voice so much that I did not want to go back and listen to our first episode. So I don't know if on that episode, if I had seen the documentary yet or not. I've seen it now, but I don't know if at the time I'd seen it. And it's a pretty interesting documentary. And like when you're not in the band or you're not around the band and you don't like, you know, especially back in, you know, the early 2000s where, you know, even before MySpace, you didn't get to keep a tab on a band as much as you can now. And
oh, absolutely.
And it's just funny to like watch what you guys were going through when I think probably 99% of the world was oblivious to everything going on. So it's so cool to go back and watch all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I feel like a lot of the things that end up happening, you know, interpersonal things and stuff with record labels and, you know, all of that, you know, politics and that kind of stuff, it tends to be hidden from the public eye, and with good reason. I mean, like, who wants to really be airing their dirty laundry when it comes to, you know, band stuff or, you know, I mean, I guess nowadays it might be something a little more commonplace just because we're so immersed in social media and it's just so your favorite celebrity, you know, their Instagram or their Twitter is like right there for you to sort of access. And if they have beef, usually, you know, they take to their social media and you can see, you know, who they're talking shit about or whatever. But, you know, back in our day, I don't know. It was just never really something that we were interested in doing. I mean, there was a few times where we, you know, said some stuff. But it's like you have to say it, you know, to like a journalist or whatever. You know, we didn't have our Facebook and our Twitter to, you know, to discuss, you know, all of the drama that was going on. And a lot of it, to be really honest, was just like kind of like almost embarrassing. You know what I mean? Like when you're involved with, you know, a lawsuit with a record label, who really wants to talk about that? You know, it's not a very exciting topic. And a lot of times it's really sad, you know, it's not always ideal. So, but it was nice to be able to sort of look back on all the things that have happened and be able to sort of let people in on what was really going on. You know, I feel like, you know, as young adults and teenagers, we really put on a brave face for a lot of people. You know, like literally I can remember like my life feel like it's falling apart and I'm on stage and I'm smiling and I'm taking photos and, you know, doing concerts and, you know, signing autographs and that sort of thing. And it's just how you have to survive.
Well, and you, you know, you guys were so young getting into it. I mean, you know, you and I are about the same age, but I'm a couple of years older. And even by the time that I got to tour, I was in my, you know, well, tour for real, I was 22. So, you know, when you were on tour, you were like, 7 and you know, having to grow, you know, and you know what 16 and kind of growing up in that environment, I couldn't imagine. I mean, I know when I was 14 15 16, I wanted to be on tour, but I obviously didn't know what it meant to be on tour back then.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know, I guess maybe it might have been in the beginning a little bit of a different experience for us being on tour. Only because initially when we were first signed, you know, through the courts of New York, we had to actually have like a legal guardian out with us.
Yeah.
Until everyone turned 18. So, you know, we had my parents out a lot. But at the same time, you know, I think this was a kind of a wild ride for them too. And they were into like, you know, allowing us to have some fun. It's not like we were locked away in a closet, you know, like we couldn't hang out with the bands or whatever, you know. We did our fair share of like drinking and partying and whatnot, like underage. But I don't know. Like, I mean, looking back at a lot of the footage, I'm sure that we were mostly just really annoying, you know, I don't know, just kind of like looking back on the person that you were back then, especially at the very, very beginning when it was all very new and exciting and we couldn't, you know, we were like right on the cusp of something that was, we had no idea that it was going to be bigger than anything we could have even dreamed of. Yeah. And we were really annoying. Just like, I can't believe all this is for me. And it's interesting, you know, in doing a documentary, you know, how you can sort of see the development, the character development of yourself. It's really strange. It's like looking at, you know, knowing that person, but almost seeing them as a stranger, sort of being able to look back, knowing what you know now and what you had gone through, and that person had maybe hadn't been there yet or hadn't learned that lesson. You know, it's an interesting exercise, I think.
And the one thing I did notice was always, you know, when any band gets together, especially early on, it's, hey, I know a guy that plays guitar, or in your case, a girl, or I know a girl that plays drums, or my sister plays drums. And how much that kind of carried through the band the entire time. It was never, we're going to do all these auditions or whatever. It was always like, somebody quit. Oh, I know this other person. And it was always a very tight-knit community that you brought into the band. It never really seemed like, you know, you guys went out and hired the most amazing female guitar player. It was always like, hey, this girl lives one town over and works at the mall. Let's go talk to her at her taco stand, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think, well, I guess earlier on, we sort of reached out further than the scope of our town, mm-hmm. you know, having Jennifer Arroyo in the band.
Yeah.
Because she was from Washington, D.C. But we had met her while we were on tour. Her band was doing the show Farm Club. They were sort of the like local band there, and her band Spine. And we were on there just as, you know, Brackish and everything was sort of breaking really huge. And she is an amazing bass player. And we actually kept in touch. There's actually photos of us all hanging out at Ozfest. Jen came to hang out. We invited her and her bandmates to come and hang. And there's like photos of like her and Fallon hanging out and all of us. And yeah, it's just really interesting. So it was like when the time came, you know, Talina had decided that she didn't want to do this anymore. It was like, well, you know, I know someone who's absolutely amazing. I mean, mind you, she doesn't live in the same country, but at that point in time, it was like, well, it really wasn't that big of a hurdle because, you know, we were, you know, fairly big at that time. And it was a good business decision. But I think as time sort of went on and there was that period of time sort of in between, you know, until the end. And then when Funeral for Yesterday came out, where we sort of, if anyone has seen the documentary, you know, we even discussed it, talking about, you know, we, Mercedes and I really weren't sure what we were going to do with ourselves, if the band was going to continue. We're sort of just like floating in the ether, not really knowing what to do. And we decided that maybe starting to look closer to home would be a mm-hmm. really great option for us. And it just so happened that, you know, Tara and Trish both were, you know, friends of friends and were amazingly talented people and ended up, you know, being some of my best friends. So I think it was really fortuitous that it happened that way.
It's fun to watch Tara and how she kind of integrated herself into the band and, you know, just showing her playing guitar and how talented she is. And she seemed like she was definitely a kind of a, like a spark for you, almost like a muse or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, Tara's like, she's one of those like lifers. Like she's like, I don't want to do anything but play guitar with her life. And, you know, she's open to, you know, all styles. She is in a number of different projects. She does everything from like country. She she's like a hired musician. So she's like, she's dedicated. And, I really, you know, not only is she, you know, one of my best friends, but she's an amazingly talented person and she just loves to play music, and her passion and energy for that, I think really helps me even now. Like, you know, we email each other like riffs back and forth. We're like, let's make some music together, you know, just like frig around or whatever. And that's really cool. And I think that was definitely something that kind of helped to reinvigorate the band at a point where we were sort of like, oh man, like we don't even really know what's going to happen. Is this it felt like, you know, like part two, you know what I mean? And we were like, oh, it's so like exhausting. And then it just, you know, it just felt right and it just clicked.
And I know at the end of the documentary, you guys are, you know, it kind of shows you kind of jamming in a room. Obviously, it looks like you're the insinuating writing some stuff. Is there New Kitty coming? Is there, you know, stuff coming along?
Well, I wouldn't say never, but at this point, a lot of the stuff that we sort of were working on has stagnated. You know, we were for a number of years sort of leading up to the release of the documentary signed to E1, and we no longer are actually signed to E1 anymore. So we are free agents. We were sort of trying to entice the label to maybe want to, you know, put out another album and whatnot. And it just never sort of ended up happening. And so at this point, you know, things kind of just kind of put the brakes on, I guess. Right now we're working on a lot of like legacy projects, obviously, you know, we did documentary and this live thing coming out as well. But I don't know, like there's a part of me that always kind of feels like to make a new album, it wouldn't feel right because the person that would be playing bass on the album is no longer with us. You know, like Ivy had left the band a number of years ago. She started a family, you know, things are different for her now. So I don't think that she would be the right person to want to do that. I mean, I know that she probably would. But you know, for Kitty and who we were, you know, towards, I guess the end of, you know, this last album cycle, you know, was Tara and Trish and Mercedes and I, and it just doesn't feel right for me. Which is a big part of why maybe I do feel hesitant to do it, because it just doesn't seem right to just do it for the sake of doing it, you know.
Yeah.
At this point we're like, I don't know, like I want to be able to do it because I think it's a lot of fun and I want to do music with my friends, you know what I mean? And it's just, it's sad that she is not around to be a part of that. So,
and I get it. You know, a lot of times when someone passes away and you hear about, you know, the band carrying on, and they always say like, well, you know, Trish would have wanted us to carry on. Do you feel like that? I mean, do you feel like she would be like, wherever she is, you know, if you believe in a heaven or hell or whatnot, but she's like, you know, would be pushing you to do a new album kind of thing?
Well, yeah, but she would be wanting to fucking do it. So,
right.
Because Trish was like that. She would be like, fuck those bitches. I'm the one playing bass on this album. That's exactly what she would say.
Well, just remember that I am a new metal bass player, and I can be the second dude in Kitty. So that would be it. getting everybody back in town for the live show, was that a fiasco to get everybody in town to do this this concert?
It was, but it wasn't a fiasco as in like everybody was like hesitant about it. It was just all the logistics of planning everything sort of in the midst of getting that documentary together as well. And then it's like, and on top of it, we have to put the show on, because it was actually an Indiegogo perk, you know, come to see the documentary, you know, with our friends and family for like a private screening. And then the live show actually just kind of came out of that. It was like, well, we should do some sort of an after party, because I know a lot of people are going to be flying in from all over the country and ended up flying from all over the world.
Yeah.
So it was a big deal. And then we started toying with like, oh, well, you know, should we do a show? And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a nightmare. and then it actually turned out to be so incredible. It was one of the best experiences that I've ever had on stage. I just felt it, the love in the room was amazing. So many familiar faces from all over, people that, you know, we hadn't seen in a long time, traveling from Australia and Japan and Germany and people from South America, Mexico, and it, all over the states. It was an unbelievable night. And to, you know, stand on stage with as many people as that we could get together who had been in the band before was also a very magical experience, because there's a little bit of a different magic for every lineup, you know? And it felt very sort of easy to sort of get back into each one of those roles and sort of feel that energy. And I know all of the other girls and Jeff as well, you know, agree that it was a really, really great night. And, you know, it was just nice to be able to come together, and that all of our egos were put aside and everything that may have happened so far in the past that we don't even know, you know, why it happened. It's all water under the bridge now. We were all able to just have a great time. And I think that's really, really cool. And it was a healing experience too, for me.
Yeah. I was going to ask if there was any band member animosity, you know, if one member replaced another member, you know, and those two members never even talked, but, you know, maybe they held a grudge or whatnot. Was all of that stuff was just out the door?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there, you can see a lot of the camaraderie, even in this upcoming live concert. You know, we did a number of sets, each with different lineups, and sort of in between each set, Rob McCallum, who also directed the documentary, you know, sort of was like a fly on the wall in the dressing room, and literally all of us were all in the dressing room together, you know, and there's Tara and Fallon talking, you know, there's Tanya and Jen talking, there's Ivy and Jeff talking, you know, and like people who, you know, had probably met in passing just, you know, from living in London and being a part of the kiddie circle, but never really like being on a stage together or hanging out together. And it was just a really cool experience. And, yeah, like there wasn't any of that at all. Everybody was just like, it was a really magical day.
You guys raised a ton of money through your Indiegogo campaign for the documentary. And, you know, had you not gotten that money, would you have felt obligated to somehow repay the fans?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, obviously, yes, of course, I would feel obligated. Whether or not I could afford to be obligated to is in a completely other story, right? Like, I don't know what, like, their Queensryche's, like, fucking actual financial situation is like. Like, I'm sure they still tour and they probably go to Europe and play to, like, 10,000 people and make a lot of money. And we've never really been at that level. You know, like, I work a regular job. We all do. And so, yeah, like, I mean, of course I would feel obligated. And that was actually one of my huge concerns with Indiegogo was, okay, so we've raised double the amount that we had originally, you know, put out there. And we have all this money, and it's like, well, now you have to produce something. And for a long time, like, we sat on this documentary for an entire year before it even started to get made. And then once it was done, we had to wait another year to try to find distribution. And all the while I'm thinking, oh, like, we had these people and their money, and oh my God, like, I don't want them to think that we've stolen their money and we're not producing fast enough and whatever. And it is unfortunate that, you know, documentaries take time. I now know how much longer they do take. You know, I would say 4 to 5 years, you know, to get everything all together from start to finish, I think is pretty good. Yeah. But, you know, we were expecting, like, literally within a year to have this documentary done. And that just wasn't the way that it happened. But yeah, I mean, I was nervous about having everyone's money. And, I mean, of course, I think, it, you know, if that were the case for us, you know, with, you know, our crowdfunding service going under, I would definitely at least try to do something. I wouldn't just say, oh, well, too bad, so sad.
Right.
And I mean, even now, like, I am still dealing with some of the repercussions from the Indiegogo stuff. You know, there were some backers that didn't get their, you know, DVD, Blu-ray, CDs, you know, like, I went to the post office and, like, mailed them all out. You know, it was like a silly day at the post office, mailing 125 packages all over the world. And there was a handful of people that didn't end up getting them. So now I'm going to be resending stuff. And I'm also going to try to send some extra stuff.
Right.
Just to say, like, hey, I'm really sorry. Like, I'll sign a note for you. Like, put a nice Origins Evolutions poster in there, whatever. So, I mean, that's the least that we can do, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yeah, I can imagine trying to, looking for $20,000, getting $40,000, and then having to sit on it for 2 years. And I'm sure that the, did you have many people coming out to you like, hey, you know, where's my stuff?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, there was a little bit of time where we were not very, vocal about stuff because, you know, like these things take time. And it's like a lot of people often don't realize that it can take, like I said, 5 years. It was 4 years from the time that we raised the money until the documentary was released. Like, a lot can happen in that time. And yeah, of course, people are, you know, are antsy and anxious about everything. And we just, you know, had to stay the course and just do what we had to do and trust in the process, you know. And we were in good hands with Rob. You know, he's done a lot of documentaries before, and we just kind of, you know, had to just go with the flow. Mind you, though, I do want to correct you. It was $40,000 Canadian, which is like $10 American.
Nice.
And let me tell you, it was in around 2016 when a lot of the filming was actually happening. And that was a really, really bad point in time for the exchange rate. And we were not getting a great amount of exchange. Like, Canadian dollar was very, very shitty compared to the US dollar. And a lot of the stuff was done in US dollars. So that was a big part of why stuff took a little longer, too, because, you know, we ended up having to use more money than $40,000 Canadian.
Wow.
To make it all happen.
Currently, that would be $29,767 US.
Yeah, right now. But I think in 2016, the exchange was considerably, it was like 1.6 or something like that. It was awful. That's rotten. I know, I look at the exchange daily. I'm one of those nerdy people. But, you know, like, that being said, I'm glad that, you know, everything kind of happened the way it did. It was a learning process. Personally, I don't think I would ever want to do a crowdfunding campaign again.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nightmare. You know, the logistics of you know, mailing everything out, and especially one that is as successful as ours was. You know, like, I don't know, like, going to the post office and then, like, paying them like a $700 bill to, like, mail stuff out. It's like, it's just crazy. It's crazy.
I love that.
You keep track of everything.
Yeah, you definitely had to feel good that you reached your goal of 20,000 in 8 hours. So
yeah, no, that was incredible, incredible. And like, honestly, we didn't even think that we would make our goal. You know, we weren't sure that what people thought, or that if people even still cared. Honestly, like, it's really a trip for sure.
The one thing with the documentary was, you know, we're kind of almost in like a documentary culture right now, where like Netflix is like plowing them out, and Amazon, and, you know, the Fire Fest doc, or the, Abducted in Plain Sight documentary, like all of these, like these just crazy documentaries. And I've always been like this, but I'll watch a documentary on anything. But the one thing with your documentary, I think even if you're not a fan of metal, or a fan of your band, or a fan of, you know, this genre of music, I think it's just a fun documentary to watch. And, you know, I don't think you necessarily have to be a fan of the band to enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's an important aspect of, you know, good documentary filmmaking, right?
Yeah.
You know, personally, like, I watched the Firefest documentary. I saw all of the hilarious shit that went down about it, but that's not my scene. That's not my,
right,
you know, like, Firefest culture is not my scene. But I still was intrigued by the story and what happened. And I was entertained when I watched it, and I was like, holy shit, this is a crazy story. And I think, you know, with any kind of, you know, storytelling, if it's done properly, you know, there's something that everyone can relate to in it. And it just so happens that, like, you know, for us, I don't know, when I look at me, and when I look at my fellow bandmates and all of the people that have been involved, it's like, I feel like we're just like everyday normal people. Like, we just had something really, really extraordinary happen to us. You know, we were your kids, the kids in high school, you know, that acted out, or, like, you know, we were, you know, played in a band and like hung out, you know, at the mall. And it just, it's really weird. And I think if people can understand that and we can really illustrate like exactly who we were, it's like we were the everyman and everyone can relate to that, you know, just having something unbelievable happen, you know, a one in a million opportunity that we took.
Well, I think it takes away the perception that you guys were manufactured by a record label or anything like that. It actually shows that you were just four girls that happened to be in a band that happened to get noticed, and everything lined up at the perfect time. The nu metal style was kind of coming up. There's four girls in a band doing this type of stuff. You know, it had its moment. It had its the draw to it. And, you know, back then, no internet, no nothing. I remember, you know, when you guys first started popping up and everybody's like, oh, they're just put together by a record label and all that crap.
Let me tell you, if we were, I'd probably be way more rich.
Right? No regular job for you. But, But yeah, so it squashed a lot of that stuff and any preconceived notions anyone can really have about the band.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, I think that has always been our struggle as Kitty. Mm-hmm. I feel like when we, you know, first came out, like you said, you know, a lot of people had certain ideas about, you know, who we were, where we came from, because it was seemingly out of nowhere. And to watch the documentary really is to see that we just came from, you know, from London, Ontario, just normal kids who were very lucky and were at the right place at the right time. And it was, you know, like just sort of the perfect convergence of events, like the perfect storm. And we just had to kind of go along for the ride.
So I know you're a big fan of pop culture, and actually I want to get into the Witchfinger horror podcast in a minute. Do you think it's fun that your band, early band photos have kind of turned into meme culture? You know, occasionally I don't know if you've reposted it or not, but it's like watch The Craft one time, and then, you know, it's the four of you, and
it's like a photo of Kitty. Yeah. I love that. Oh my God. It's incredible. To me, it's incredible being, you know, the age that I am, but still sort of, you know, interested in pop culture and interested in, you know, imager and memes and all, you know, all the weird stuff that, you know, you kids come up with these days or whatever. You know, I still feel very connected to that and very immersed in it because, you know, I am on, you know, Instagram a lot and all that stuff. You know, I run the Kitty page. I have my own and also part of the Witchfinger Horror podcast. And I just think it's so unbelievable that, like, everything now we're like retro cool, you know?
Right.
What I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That is such a, it's such an unbelievable thing to me. Like, I was like, because recently we just put out a reprint of a bunch of our classic t-shirts through our friends at Twisted Tees.
Nice.
I was actually looking through a bunch of images for some Kitty t-shirts, like maybe that I hadn't seen for like 20 years. And I literally clicked on this image and someone was selling a classic Kitty t-shirt, like from like 2000 and maybe 2000 or 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And it was $125. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? That's insane. But
wow.
But it's like, you know, when you're like your t-shirts, you know, you're like old school t-shirts, like your original pressing from your tour, you know, 20 years ago, when it goes for over $100, it's like, that's when you know, it's like, you're retro cool now. It's cool to be 90s, you know, mall goth again.
Right,
like,
exactly.
It's cool to, you know what I mean? It's cool to like say like, that's who you were, you know, that kid wearing the corn shirt with the spiked hair, you know, it's cool to say that because now it's all come back around. People are appreciating it again, appreciating it, that, you know, culture and that sort of thing that was happening for what it was. But I remember being literally like the butt of all kinds of jokes back when it was actually happening, you know what I mean? But there was a lot of us, and I think we can all look back and be like, you know what, that was a great time in our lives, you know, being in high school and loving bands and dressing weird, and awesome, it was great. Sort of in the mid-2000s, it was like, oh, like it wasn't really cool anymore. It was kind of like it had gone to a point where it became like a parody of itself, and like anybody that was like still trying to, you know, do heavy music, it's like, you didn't really, for us anyways, we felt like we didn't really fit in anywhere.
Right.
You know, we weren't like hardcore and we weren't like death metal or whatever. And we weren't like that kind of mall, you know, whatever, mall goth or whatever, you know, somebody probably would say that we are back then. So yeah, we were sort of in this weird phase, like we were, you know, trying to grow up. And it's just neat to be able to come out the other side and then be like, yeah, like we were cool the whole time, man.
I swear.
Look at us. We were the whole time.
You know, what's funny is like I've said, you know, you're a couple of years younger than me, but like the biggest bands out there right now that got big within the last couple of years, those dudes are like 10 years older than us. Like, and it's so bizarre that,
right?
You know, like dudes in Five Finger Death Punch are in their late 40s. And so it's, and you know, you were doing stuff, you know, 30 years ago.
I know, like. Don't their backs hurt? Like, fuck, man. Like literally I'm like pushing 40 and like, I hurt all over. Everything hurts all the time. I'm like, I don't know how, like I think about if I could, you know, like do touring full time again. And I really think that it would be, I'd be in a lot of pain, a lot more pain than I was 20 years ago.
Yeah. I turned 40 in June this year. So I'll be grandpawing it up everywhere. Right.
Woo-hoo!
Oh man.
I know. I got goals though. You know, you just gotta be like, you know what? 40's around the bend, you know, like gotta look good. Gotta, you know, be healthy. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. And I definitely think I've been, you know, going into 40, I think I'm probably happier now than I probably was going into my 30s. So.
Oh yeah. Same here for sure. 150 zillion percent for sure.
Nice.
I agree with you there.
Well, I was checking out, I'm subscribed to the Witchfinger Horror Podcast. You guys don't put out a ton of episodes. You've obviously dipped your toe into the podcasting world. And how are you enjoying kind of being a podcaster?
I love it because, I don't know, I just think it's like a different, well, especially the genre that we're in. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, 80s horror movies, really bad movies. I think a lot of people don't even realize, you know, my musical background and I guess who I am and what I have done previous. And I think it's really cool when people kind of figure that out. But for me also, it's kind of neat to be almost anonymous in a way and just kind of have something that I'm doing sort of stand up on its merits alone, rather than, you know, it'd be like, oh, well, it's only popular because Morgan Kitty's in it. A lot of people don't even realize who I am. And you know, it's just myself and my friends Yasmina and Megan, and we get drunk and we watch bad movies and we do a little bit of research and, you know, have a hell of a good time just talking about the movies that we love. And I don't know, I think our podcast is pretty ridiculous. So it's, we have a good time for sure. And I don't know. Yeah. We're crazy.
Yeah. It's definitely a lot of fun. I check out episodes often. I'm not a huge horror fan, never have been. So it's like some of the stuff you guys are talking about, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I also listen to like some Star Wars podcasts and I have no idea what they're talking about either, but just the passion that they have for it, I know it must be mean something to them. And so it kind of the same thing with you guys. Like you guys are in depth. Like I was listening today to the New Year's Evil. And
yeah.
the filmography that you guys go into for some of the people in the movie, and you guys are like going on and on about these, like, not only have I not heard about the main movie you're talking about, I definitely haven't heard about like the subgenre movies that that you guys are talking about. And I'm like, man, yeah. these girls are so smart.
I mean, bad movies are it's a passion for sure. And it's definitely also an acquired taste. And for us, the worse, the better, but it's something that we've been doing for so long. Like the reason why we started doing the podcast was because we were like, well, we always just get together and get drunk on a Saturday night and watch bad movies and laugh. Like we think we're pretty funny. Maybe some other people will think we're funny too. and that's why we decided to do it. And, in the beginning, we kind of really weren't sure exactly what was, you know, going to go on. But I think we kind of have our format down now where we just want to have a good time, obviously, and say some ridiculous shit, but also get pretty in depth into some of the research, you know, on actors and other movies and, you know, the people that are involved in the making of the movie as well. But it's honestly, it's not anything so in depth that it's like, you know, not common knowledge. Like you can find this knowledge everywhere. Yeah. It's just, you know, you got to spend the time to sort of compile it all. And I think we do it in a really fun way. Like, honestly, I have a blast. And I know we don't get together as much as we probably should. Like, I know podcasts are usually, typically they like to be like regular, I guess, every couple weeks or like once a month or every week or whatever. But, I mean, we all, you know, have our busy lives, but, you know, like if we were getting drunk together every week, it would be like a nightmare. Oh my God. It'd be crazy. Cause like, we're always like, yeah, we're going to get smashed for this episode. And then now we've sort of recently forayed into the video podcast, aspect of Witchfinger as well, where with the audio podcast, you know, we do our movie thing, and it's mostly 80s horror. Mm-hmm. But with the video one, we're starting to do movies that are not necessarily of the horror genre, but just like ridiculous movies that we love. The last episode was on Mortal Kombat.
Nice.
So, you know, that's where we're going with it.
See, I've done a couple of episodes where I've had a few drinks and my voice gets so slurry that it's unlistenable. And plus I still do an interview type show. And the one thing that happened a couple of years ago at the Rockin' Pod Expo, the first year they had it, I went to just kind of pimp my show. And then they actually needed to borrow my recorder for some of the live shows. So at that point, I was like, well, I guess I'm not doing any interviews. I'm going to get drunk. And then right about the time I started drinking, people started coming up. I'm like, hey, would you like to talk to this person? Would you like to talk to that person? Like Steve from Skin Lab showed up and who I toured with in the past.
Cool.
You know, with Primer, they actually Skin Lab opened for us on a tour. And so, you know, it was great to see him again. So I got my recorder back, started interviewing. Toby Wright sat down and so I'm talking about like Injustice for All with him and I'm like Injustice for All, like just it was terrible.
Bad.
So yeah, now I try not to have too many drinks when I podcast.
Oh no. Well, see, for us I think that's part of our charm.
Right.
The one thing out of control.
You know, the one thing you guys talked about in this episode, and I don't think it was you that brought it up, but you guys talked about people in movies that are supposed to be like the punk rock kid, but they don't look right. Like nothing ever looks right. And I'm like, that's such a pet peeve for me. And it actually made me think about this new upcoming Motley Crue movie where it just doesn't look right. And everybody I've talked to is like not feeling it. And I'm like, I think it's because that style is on borderline cheesy already. So if you don't nail it, it's going to look real bad. And
I'll tell you, I haven't seen a preview for the have they done like a trailer or anything for the Motley Crue movie yet?
Yeah, it's the trailer's out, the dirt.
Okay, because I haven't seen the trailer yet, but now I'm very intrigued. Like I did hear like it's going to be a Netflix movie, right?
Yeah.
So I did hear about it. I just haven't seen anything yet, but I am very curious because that is definitely, like, you know, like you said, it's already like on the cusp of being like too cheesy.
Yeah.
And then it's like you can always you can always tell when it's like that guy is a jock. That guy is just an actor guy with perfectly white straight teeth. Like he doesn't live that. He doesn't dress like that, you know? Like you can tell. It's just really it bugs me.
I liked how you guys were like, but he might be like look punk, but then he'll have like something goth about him, and then all of a sudden, and like they never ever get the genres right, and you always just assume it's like some guy in a suit dressing him up. It's like, yeah, I think this is what it looks like.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it's you can tell that it's really contrived.
So, but with the Witchfinger Horror Podcast, do you know the best way for people to find it? Just any podcatcher, iTunes, all that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. You can head to witchfinger.com. If you want to just stream right off the website, also iTunes, wherever you might also get other podcasts. I don't know. Not like I'm kind of an old person, so I don't know too much about like all the technological side of things. But is it Stitcher?
Yeah, there's Stitcher and Podcast Addict. And
yeah, you know, actually, I don't think we're on Stitcher yet, but we're working on it. But yeah, if you, I'm pretty sure, like, you know, iTunes is a great way to get it. And if you go to YouTube as well, you can look us up for our two. We only have two video episodes, one on Rotor and one on Mortal Kombat. So you can check them out there.
You have to do the movie Rad for me, so we can get that one out of the way.
Yeah, actually, that's hilarious. Yes, that would be great. Yasmina is a big fan of that movie. It looks, I don't think I've seen it, but I know of it, and it looks very funny.
Yeah,
looks radical, man.
It's definitely radical. Yeah, you have to check it out for a bad 80s movie with you know, all about BMX and all that good stuff.
Who doesn't love that?
All right. Did we cover everything that we needed to cover?
I think so. Yeah, we talked about the live concert. Maybe we should plug that one more time.
Go ahead.
All right. So yeah, the Kitty Live at the London Music Hall comes out March 26th. It was recorded at the London Music Hall, obviously, during our Origins and Evolutions after party. You can get it on Amazon. There's a DVD, there's a Blu-ray, and also if you get it through Vimeo with the digital version, there's a number of bonus, you know, features, extras, all kinds of stuff. With digital is the easiest way to put it up, so we've got stuff never before seen. I think there's probably 6-7 hours of the making of every album, of you know, the making of the Brackish video, of, you know, unbelievable stuff, tour stuff. It's great. So yeah, we're really excited about the release of that, and it will definitely, you know, bring a tear to some people's eyes and get everybody's nostalgia going, because it's got as many people from Kitty that we could get together. So it's a really awesome concert. It sounds fabulous too. Siegfried Meyer, who did In the Black and I Failed You for us, did the mix on it. So it sounds phenomenal.
One last thing I did remember, I did want to ask you about the photo. It came up about a year ago, popped up again. You, Anselmo, Ozzy, and Wayne Static. I'm assuming that was an Ozfest promo.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do you remember about that? And what a cool group of dudes to be hanging out with.
I remember being like, why the fuck am I here? These people are legends. And I'm just like, fucking Morgan, like, what the fuck? Like, you can see it in my face. I'm like, what the fuck is my life? That was me. Yeah, like, I remember it was, I believe, for Kerrang magazine out of the UK. Then they were doing the photo shoot, because that photo ended up on the cover of Kerrang for their Ozfest issue.
Was that the one where, like, you opened it up and, like, it folded out and there was like more people? Does that make sense? Like, or was it just the cover?
You know what? It was just the cover. So it was just, okay, that photo shoot was just the four of us.
Okay.
There might've been some other people in there, like, because I'm pretty sure the entire issue was the Ozfest issue.
Nice.
But yeah, like, I remember, it was kind of impromptu. I don't ever remember seeing it on the, like, itinerary for, like, Morgan's interviews or whatever. It was kind of like, oh, they come to get me off the bus. They're like, they want you to be in this photo with fucking Phil and Ozzy and Wayne. And I was like, okay, that's crazy. I'm pretty sure I had just got done playing as well. My hair looks like kind of disgusting and wet. Mind you, all of these Ozfest shows, it was like literally like, it was so hot. It was like the Houston Ozfest. Oh my God. Like, it was like 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
Was that Ozfest 2000?
Yeah.
I was at that Houston Ozfest.
Yeah, it was so hot. Do you remember that shit? I remember dying.
It was at a speedway or a racetrack?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was wild. But yeah, like, I just remember we were all just kind of joking around, chumming around. I can't even believe that that's me. Like, it was an unbelievable moment. You know, everybody's laughing, drinking, and having a good time. And you know, they just kind of snapped a few shots and that was it. And history was made, I guess. And, yeah, they put it out on the cover of Kerrang. And I think there was a few other, you know, shots, B-roll shots that sort of went out after. I wish I had, like a good digital copy of it. I actually do have the copy of Kerrang.
Nice.
Because we used to buy all of the magazines and whatnot. So I do have it somewhere with the cover as well. But yeah, that was like definitely a really surreal moment in my life. And yeah, like I do remember it. I remember being nervous because like those people are, I don't know, they're awesome and I'm just me.
Yeah, that Ozfest, I've actually talked about that on here before. I went to, this was I was in Primer, but Primer was actually on that Ozfest.
Yep, I remember.
And I went to, I had broke up with a girlfriend, and then I went from, we went to the See It in St. Louis, and then as I was at the St. Louis show, I'm like, I guess I'm 20 or 21 at the time, and it was like Help Wanted. It. Remember, like they had all those carnival games or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yep.
If you throw a dart, you win a promo copy of, you know, spit or something. And it had a Help Wanted sign, and I was like, "What's this sign about?" And they're like, "Oh, you meet us here after the show. You go with us, and you you put those games up every day, and you get we got $75 a day, and we got a meal pass, and for catering." And I was like, all right, let's do it. And I went back to my friends. I was like, I'm leaving with Ozfest. And so I did Kansas City, Dallas, Houston. And I think after Houston, you guys went to, like, you had, like, a week off and went to, like, the Gorge in Washington or something, like Seattle. So at Houston.
Yeah, we went up that way because I'm pretty sure the Gorge was, was that not the last? Show
something like that. I know you guys had like a week off and you were going across the country, and I ended up flying back home from Houston. But yeah, man, that was some fun stuff because I got to see Pantera in Dallas, and then I got to see in Houston, I think, was Dimebag's birthday, so that was cool.
Oh my god, yeah.
And
yeah.
And then
I remember that.
And then
that was the fireworks.
Yeah, that was nuts. And then,
I remember that in the parking lot, everybody standing around getting drunk and Dimebag like blowing up a cardboard cutout of Britney Spears and he had like $10,000 worth of fireworks. He was just letting them off in the fucking, it was wild. What a strange life.
And then in Dallas, after the Ozfest, we all went to the clubhouse and Dimebag and Vinny, I think, got up and jammed cover songs like Van Halen songs. And like at one point, Phil was like handing out shots, and Dimebag did the same. And it was some of the most like the most surreal moments of my life. I'm like, why am I even here? I was like, you know, I was a lowly carnival barker, basically.
Yeah, but you know what? The beautiful thing about it is like, especially with those guys, like it just felt everything felt so inclusive.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It wasn't like, oh, like we're, you know, old stars only, or like, you know, artists only. It was like literally, it was like everyone come on down, everybody's invited, we're all gonna get drunk together, and you know, we're all gonna be, you know on the same level tonight. And that was always something that I admired about them, like that they all were just really cool. They just wanted to hang out with people. They just loved rocking out and talking to people. It was really cool.
Yeah, I think it was either you or I had Fallon on here a couple of years ago, and one of you guys said that at one of the shows you looked over and Dimebag standing on the side of the stage watching you guys, and how just nerve-wracking that had to have been.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I've had that experience many, many times, you know, and it's like when, you feel like you just kind of, I don't know, like we always kind of felt like imposters. Like we were like, oh, we don't even belong here, you know, we're just like, you know, little girls from London, Ontario. And when your idols, when the musicians that you look up to are standing on the side of the stage watching you play, like that's such a, it's such a trip. Like that happened in Europe as well. With Korn, I remember one of our very first festival experiences, Korn was on as well. And we were playing, and I remember a couple of the guys standing side stage, and just being like, wow, this is like, this is crazy. We've finally made it, you know, because that was like, that was shit that we used to joke about when we were like super young, when we first started out. We're like, oh yeah, when we're out on tour with Korn, blah, blah, blah. Like just laughing about it and joking. But then it really happened. And it was like, so, so unbelievable. Like, it is nerve wracking, but then it's kind of like you snap to attention. You're like, you got to put on the best show that you can. That's all you can do.
I had I grew up loving the band Downset, and their bass player, James Morris, was, I went and seen him a couple of times, and he always blew me away. And one time my pre-Primer 55 band opened for them, and he came up to me after the show and was like, man, it's great to see some talent up there. And I could have died right then. I was like, oh my God.
Cool. Downset was a good band. I remember them. Yeah, they were rad.
Great band. Well, Morgan, yeah. it has been a blast catching up with you, and you know, you're welcome on the podcast anytime. Any fellow podcaster, you know, is always welcome on the show.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And let's leave it out with a kiddie song. What track would you like us to leave us out with?
Oh, I don't know. You got anything from the Origins Evolutions live album?
Well, you know, this is all going to be edited later, so I have every kiddie song ever.
Okay. Every kiddie song ever. Well, why don't we let's plug the new live at the London Music Hall and actually play something that was recorded at the Music Hall. Let's do the live version of Cutthroat from Origins Evolution.
Huge thank you to Morgan for coming on the podcast. Make sure to check out the new DVD once it is released next Tuesday. Let her know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you. And so, for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you next Thursday.